Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blue Kool-Aid drinkers, we are back! And we are recording this the Monday after another rough loss for the Lions, 24-6 in Dallas, the national noon game. And the Lions had a chance to take a lead late in this game in the fourth quarter. They get the ball on the one-yard line after a nice screen pass to Brock Wright, who, you know, he got chased back down from behind by Micah Parsons. And then they get the ball spotted really oddly, like almost like a yard and a half out from the goal line, even though it looked like he possibly could have scored. And then Jamal Williams fumbles for the second time in this game. This time he gives it to the other team. And the rest is history. Lions lose 24-6. That would give the Lions 13-10 lead. But anyways, we'll dive into all that. But before we do, let's introduce the Blue Kool-Aid crew that's here. So we got DJ.
Hey.
Bob.
Hello.
Connor.
Hello.
And then Rud Dog will be joining us probably later in the episode. So he'll just kind of pop on. And I'm Big Z. I think I forgot to introduce myself. Lions, 24-6. The defense actually comes out and plays well out of the bye week here for the most part. You know, there's still little bumps here and there, but let's start there at least. Let's start with the positive this time. A couple times we start with the negative. Let's start with the positive on the defensive side of the ball. Were you guys encouraged by this performance by the defense in this game?
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. Our defensive rookies are looking like they could be pieces for the future.
Yeah, Josh Pascal, playing in his first game, got a humongous amount of snaps. I thought 56. He played 90% of the 89% of the snaps on defense this week. He went no training camp to playing 89% of the snaps in 1 week.
Is he winning you over a little bit, Nazi? I know you were.
I watched this game. I rewatched the game specifically to watch how he played in this game, and he was good against the run, and he has a lot of work to do against the pass. So, which is his strength is the run defense, and the Cowboys primarily like to run the ball. So, it was encouraging at the very least, better than I thought, especially the amount of snaps he played. I thought it was crazy.
Yeah.
He's definitely getting slower throughout the game. So.
I'm definitely
training camp.
I'm encouraged because I thought Pascal came out and made an immediate impact. And Kuda, like Dan Campbell said, was his best game as a Lion, and I can't argue with
how
him on
about
that.
It. 15 tackles.
Yeah, awesome. Crazy.
Played mostly in the box too, like a linebacker or something. He played more in the box than Derek Barnes in this game. He was pretty much an outside linebacker for a large portion of this game, which is pretty wild.
Yeah.
You don't see that too often.
They're adjusting their scheme, you know, to do more what they were doing last year than, you know, trying to contain everything to the middle, like drive everybody, funnel everybody in the middle and get them there. So
yeah. And Michael Brockers got benched. So that was very encouraging because we haven't given him much love on this podcast and deservedly so.
Yeah.
And it is obviously proven out. Hutch had a decent game in this one. A couple sacks, a couple nice moves. Connor, they're playing more out of the 2-point stance.
Yes,
game. We heard about
the coaches listening.
Pascal,
see that
Pascal was playing out of 2-point a lot too, actually, in this game. So a lot of different adjustments going on.
Yeah, it worked well for Hutch earlier, and I'm glad to see them finally starting to like use player strengths. I think Aaron Glenn was maybe a little stubborn with his scheme early on. Maybe that's concerning, mm-hmm. but he has started to adapt, and maybe this is a lesson he's learned. And if the defense can keep figuring it out and Ben Johnson can figure something out, and Aaron, and if Goff can hold on to the football, maybe we can start winning a few games. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but really, this is a young defense. We've been a little hard on them, and deservedly so. I mean, they were giving up those points in 4 weeks in like NFL history.
Now it's the Falcons, right? Aren't the Falcons last now? I think they are.
Until defense, I gotta go up and look. But
I thought I saw that we jumped from 32 to 31. Yeah, the Bengals so slaughtered them.
That wouldn't be surprising by any means. But I mean, you got Kirby Joseph out there, starting rookie Aiden Hutchinson, and obviously Pascal playing 90% of the snaps. Ali McNeil only in his second year. Malcolm Rodriguez, obviously, who we've talked a lot about in here. So just a really young defense. There's a core there to build around. We just got to keep hoping it keeps developing. And one or two of these guys can at least become elite, and then the rest just kind of come along. I mean, what do you guys think about Hutch in this game? I know he had one and a half sacks in this game.
I thought it was great.
If you do go watch back, though, there's still a lot of room for improvement. He got a lot of one-on-ones in this game that he didn't win, which is still a little concerning to me. I mean, he is a rookie, though.
I thought he was.
But he needs to win more of those one-on-ones. If you go back and watch, he had a lot of. They left him a lot alone on island with the left tackle, and I think he needs to start winning a little more than he is right now, because sometimes he just gets absolutely buried and has no impact on the play.
I think he has.
He just got to find his sweet spot.
I think he has as many sacks as the rest of the team combined, doesn't he?
Probably.
He has four. He has 4.5, and I think the rest of the team is 4.5. So he's clearly doing something right as a rookie.
Well, I mean, 3-1 game. So.
And this is the first game he's made that adjustment back to 2-point, which I think, while it works for him, it is still an adjustment, I think. So. I don't know. I think he'll be fine. I'm not at all worried about Hutch, but, you know, those are valid criticisms.
Yeah, I still want to see more out of the D-tackle position. There's just nothing in the pass rush from the D-tackle position right now. That's not encouraging.
And as far as the encouraging of the defense, like you mentioned Kirby Joseph, I think he's getting better every week. And mm-hmm. I think Okwara had his best game of the year. I mean, the way he was had some impact out there. And even Owarie
making
a couple plays.
Yeah.
What do you think, UJ? I didn't hear your take on the D yet. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, first of all, I know there's a lot of criticisms about the coaching in this game. I think this is maybe, in my opinion, one of the best coached games of the year for this staff. And some of you may disagree with that, but that defense played good enough for us to win a game. The offense and the turnovers.
Are you talking about the defense coaching overall coaching? When you say
overall coaching, because I even think the offensive game plan was pretty good for the most part. But you know, when you turn off the ball like that, I mean, what are you gonna do? Horrible throws by Goff, the fumble by Jamal. I mean, come on,
two fumbles. So he's lucky the other one
pretty well
recovered.
They game planned it well, is what I'm saying. You know, and at first I was mad at them not calling for a red flag on a couple of those plays. As it turned out, there was good reason they didn't. I accept it, and I think they were probably right to just keep playing. Except maybe that one on the end zone, like you were talking about, Z, they probably got a better spot on that one, maybe.
Yeah, it only moved a couple inches, so you probably shouldn't challenge that.
Yeah, but otherwise, I think it was a fairly well-coached game. Just the execution was not there, and a lot of that's on Goff, who's, I'm afraid, showing his colors.
Yeah. If they need to execute better, that sounds like a Patricia quote. They just got to execute.
No. Hey, we'll see. I know you said in our chat that injuries are never an excuse.
They're not.
I think there is an excuse. Look at our offense, we could have won that game even with the injuries. But you got to admit, it does hurt not having DeAndre Swift.
Of course it hurts. But
Amon Ross, St. Brown, DJ Shark. You know, we're missing like all our like big weapons.
Although Goff could have scored.
That won't have any effect. I mean, come on.
I didn't say it wouldn't have an effect. I say you got to coach better and get these guys in better position to win the game. What? He scored six points at the end of the day.
They weren't using it as an excuse, but I'm just saying, realistically, the better players give you an advantage. I don't see how you can not see that.
I think both those things are true. Both those things are true. Like,
the coach doesn't carry the ball. He doesn't throw the ball. I mean, they still have to execute.
Yeah, exactly.
But they do need to execute. Like, the players aren't there. Yeah, Chark's not there. But, like, Goff's pocket presence was terrible. He missed that easy touchdown. Like, this team...
Terrible. This is a horrible Goff
this
game.
Team
horrible.
Was capable of putting up more than 6 points with Goff today. Or whatever, Sunday. It's a mixed bag. I think you're both a little bit right, but...
Like the one you someone highlighted in our chat, I can't remember. But on the play 40. Action pass, you know, Jabal Williams whiffs on a play action pass. He put a really weird blocking attempt on an edge rusher, but Vera Goff just steps up in the pocket. There's a wide open guy running deep down the field. But he doesn't. He trails backwards. This is what we saw last year. He creates his own problems by not having good pocket presence. And the first few weeks he looked great, but I don't know if like that was just like the training and stuff from the offseason, but now that we're deeper in the season, he's kind of forgetting some of that stuff. I don't know, but it was bad. And that interception in the second half on the Diggs is horrible. If as a quarterback, you're supposed to throw that high and outside. If, at the very least, it sails out of bounds. You don't throw it short and inside, because that's what will happen.
Yeah.
What do you say, Brad Berryman on sidelineport.com?
Great article if you want to read it about Goff is who we thought he was, basically. And it's a really well written article, which it's titled Jared Goff is Who He Has Always Been. And it goes into some interesting things. For instance, when he was with the Rams and they were making their runs, McVay lost confidence in him and he was trying to read the defenses for him in the headphones until they shut him off.
I remember that.
Because he didn't trust Goff to do it on his own. And, well, that's a pretty telling thing if that's true. And, you know, I'm not saying it absolutely is true or not, but these are things that why you lost favor in L.A. Yeah. So
it's the turnovers.
He's doing the same
thing. It's consistency. I feel like when he's great, he's great, but he can never string together like 6 to 8 good games in a row. It's always like 2 to 3 where you're like, oh my God, he's the guy. And then he does this where he fumbles 3 times and throws a really bad pick.
No, when the pressure gets on him, he falters and he's not elevating anybody else's game. He's just not.
Yeah.
And, you know, he needs to do that. And he's not.
I agree. And he drips around in the pocket. You know, he doesn't step up when he should. He'll like drip to these really deep dropbacks.
Yep,
where it's not necessary.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And one thing, well, Red Dog's trying to connect here, but he was regretted that we drafted Sewell before because he wanted Micah Parsons. But the one-on-one matchup, Sewell and Parsons lined up against each other 12 times, and Parsons had one hurry, and that was only because Goff messed up in the pocket and like was running weird. But it was a good game from Sewell.
It was. Sewell's awesome.
Sewell's amazing. He's definitely a top 3 player on this team. I think that's indisputable.
Yeah, I actually kind of look forward to him taking over left tackle one day because Decker did not have a good game in this one particularly. Evan Brown didn't have a great game from the right guard spot either. A couple crucial holding calls. One was very questionable. Then the Anzalone defensive holding.
Yeah, you always get the cowboy bump.
Yeah, the Anzalone defense holding was just preposterous. That made no sense.
Horrible.
If anything, it was holding on the offense, a guy.
I still think overall our offensive line is a strength. I thought they played well overall. I mean, you're finding some flaws, but I mean, that's one of our better pieces right now.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Which is why we have enough pieces to win.
The
receiving core is not there in the running game. Williams like fumbling for the first time ever, and of course he picks the play on the 1 yard line to do it. Like, there was some bad luck and bad play. And like when you were missing your top receivers, you can't afford that. And unfortunately, they had like their top offensive players were all playing badly. Maybe Hawk was playing fine. I don't know. But it's just, that was a weird game.
Yeah.
Sad game.
But in the hit of the game to me, well, there's a couple. The one on Zeke that like kind of bent his knee. I think Deshaun Elliott put on it. Ooh, that was a good one.
Elliott. Yeah.
I mean, It was a good hit. It was a solid hit, legal hit. And then the Kirby Joseph hit was awesome. That's highly encouraging. This is a guy that like creates turnovers. That's what he's in the game to do. And he dropped the other interception earlier. That was a killer. He was right there.
He's around the ball,
triple
man.
Coverage.
He's got instincts, and that's what they drafted him for.
And
so, yeah, play him as much as you can now, man. Develop some of these.
But, yeah, I mean, right now the Lions are in prime position to draft a new quarterback because they have the first pick in the draft that the season ended today.
I just want to remind listeners, okay.
It's not over.
That going back to right before the draft, I was saying we should draft Bailey Zappe. And it was third or fourth round. I can't remember.
Fourth round is what he went in.
Yeah. We could have easily had him. And we could have had, if nothing else, a developmental backup quarterback instead of these schleps we got, you know, as second stringers.
Nate Sudfeld.
And we totally passed on something like that.
I still disagree with that. Take.
If he's only going to be a backup, I still think those. And he's currently getting spanked around by the Bears, so maybe he's not the legend you think he is.
Well, they benched Jones, put him in, and he immediately
brought
Jones
two
touchdowns
too.
Immediately.
I don't know if that's a good argument.
I mean, both guys have had like a limited
the point is
about a time to prove themselves.
We don't have an option after Goff, really. You know, what are we going to do? Goff plays another bad game. Does Campbell bench him and we put do we put him in?
He's that.
Yeah,
hey,
I would rather have Zappe as our backup than James Mitchell, who we took in the fourth round. So I will say that.
Anyway, I think we kind of dropped the ball there with the quarterback position. I'm not saying we had to draft a franchise guy, but we had to draft something we thought we could develop.
We do have the number one overall pick currently, so we could fix that.
Hey, but the season's not over yet.
CJ Stroud season?
You still got to pick the right one.
You know,
still got to pick the right one.
The Lions are only two games out of the seventh spot behind I think the Packers still hold the seventh seed, actually, at 3-4. Oh, the Packers look horrible, too. So
we're going to make the playoffs, but let's just say, hypothetically, Stroud or Young right now. Which way do we guys go?
Stroud.
I think I agree.
Stroud.
I'd go Stroud.
Stroud.
Some people are high on Young. I'm just curious how you guys feel about it.
Well, Young is like from the Cardinals, right? He's what, 5'11"?
He's
Yeah, he's very mobile. I'm not saying he's a bad.
Does he do his homework unlike Kyler Murray?
Do you like that stat? Like Kyle Murray?
With the COD stats,
I don't know, like 2-24 on Call of Duty double XP weekend.
I saw that stat. It's all so funny.
It's really funny.
I hope Goff lights it up, though, because I'd really like to get that Will Anderson from Alabama, who's not a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Another defensive beast.
There you go. Yeah,
that'd be nice.
Yeah, it's interesting because right now the Lions hold the first and 20th pick, but there's some other teams out there with multiple high picks that can move up. But, you know, we have a long time to talk about that.
I don't want to talk about it. I was just curious. I wanted to pulse check on the quarterback.
Yeah, in this game, Josh Reynolds finally went under Connor in his receiving yards. One catch for 8 yards in this game.
Oh, finally. Thank God I forgot to bet on this game. So
it really stunk. Amon-Ra catches one ball and has one like reverse. That wasn't him on the reverse carry. That was Khalif Raymond. But basically, Amon-Ra has his one catch, gets up a little shaken, then he has to go to the concussion protocol, and he passed like instantly. Like he's like, I'm ready to go out on the field, but the NFL said no. He looked a little shaky getting up on the field, so you're out for the rest of the game, despite passing all our neuroscientist tests. What are the point of the test? I don't know, because once you get up wobbly, you're out of the game anyways.
The NFL.
I don't understand the tests afterwards. They seem to be pointless if that's how they're gonna, you know, make the ruling now going back in the field. That's the Tua rule. If this happened 5 weeks ago, you would have been back in the game just fine. There had been no incident, but now because of that, he was not back in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I get it that they're trying to protect the players, but I don't know. It seems like they're still trying to figure it out how to apply this rule. And hopefully they'll clean it up for next year, you know.
They're trying to protect the players. At the same time, the players have incentives and they get paid based on their performance on the field. So in some ways, they're not protecting the players because they don't allow them to hit those incentives to get paid.
Well, incentives, but I'm talking about people with CTE.
I'm just saying they're not
that stuff. You know,
I know what you're saying, but I'm just saying if the guy is completely fine to go back in the field and they don't let him back on, that works against him.
I mean, if you're just talking about the players wanting to play, they're always going to say, put me back in, you know? So
Well, you know, back in my day, okay, when I played college football, cigar. I want to tell you something. When I got hurt on the field, which happens sometimes, you get your bell rung. We didn't have concussions back then. And other
concussions
things.
Concussions didn't exist. They haven't been invented yet. But
the main thing you do is not show anybody that you're hurt. You got to get up, get back to the huddle. And no matter how bad it hurts, you can't let anybody know it hurts.
Yeah.
The guys in the huddle might know, but you can't let the coach.
And you can only speak in one-word sentences. Yes. They're like, if you extend it out to like five or six words, you're going to start slurring at some point.
How many words do you need? Come on.
There was another guy historically who, I forget who it was, a pro player who got up slow every time. Like he was always hurt. So you never knew if he was hurt or not.
It was a running back. That was, who was it?
I thought that was kind of a brilliant strategy. Disguise it by just always moving slow.
Yeah, true.
Anyway. Yeah. But yeah, do we put most of this offense performance on Goff? You guys said the coaching was great. So is there no one else to blame?
Well, there's some scheme issues too. I mean, it's got to be on Goff, Ben Johnson. It's got to be a little on everyone. Goff, I think, gets over 50% of the blame to me.
Goff and Williams for the fumble. I mean, he played great otherwise, but that fumble was a key fumble. Yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
Goff needs to step up there, though. He has a pocket. He needs to be more aware.
On the fumble?
I felt like he was dropping way back. Was it the fumble or the sack? I'm thinking of, sorry. He fumbled twice.
So.
Are you talking about?
Yeah.
The one when Jamal like did the play action and then the guy went outside and Jamal had to like
that was, he didn't fumble on that play.
Try to run him by. Is it that one? No, that wasn't.
I'm talking about the goal line and when he called it the one.
Oh, yeah. When Jamal fumbled.
Pretty sure he ran to our own guy.
That
too,
was the play of the game right there.
Yeah.
To me, that was above all. That was the play. Like you can blame Goff and he definitely didn't help with his interceptions, but that fumble was the worst error of because it was an unforced error. Like they didn't make it happen. It wasn't like we got beat there. We literally just gave up our chance to go ahead on just our own mistake. That's just so
brutal.
But
then we stopped them though. Dallas, you know, we got the ball back. So that's encouraging. On the plus side,
I know.
Our defense did step up a little.
Right.
I think that's a big testament to the coaching this week. I know we didn't seal up everything. Our offense regressed, but the fact that they can show that our defense can adapt and actually play with some effectiveness, like to show it wasn't just the players and that the coaches can adapt. I think that actually is more promising. Probably the biggest takeaway from this whole week was that adapting and improvement on defense. Now, if we can just get our offense back on track, we might be able to string some wins together.
Yeah. And it's going to be tough. The Lions are home against the Dolphins. And then the Packers, all these games are winnable. Then they're at Chicago, at the Giants, who are by a lot of, NFL analysts, the worst 6-1 team. They win every game by one score. It's remarkable. They're like the anti-Lions from a few years ago when the Lions were just losing every game by one score. If you watch Nebraska football the last few years, the anti-Scott Frost who lost 30 games by one score at Nebraska or something like
Why
that.
Why can't we be the anti-Lions one year? Just win every game. One time. That'd be nice.
I know.
It's coming. It's coming.
We saw how that goes, though, as Lions fans. We had a 6-1 start once and then we screwed the pooch that year.
Is that the year they finished 10-6?
No, we finished 7-9.
Kitna
was our quarterback.
Didn't they start 5-0 the 10-6 season where they lost to New Orleans? Am I crazy?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Okay.
We definitely it was 5-0 like the Monday night game.
Monday night game against the Bears.
Very memorable game.
That 7-1 season where they weren't 7-1 and then lost out. I had $100 bet on that season that the Lions would win 8 games. And they were 7-1. I'm practically counting the money, man. And they just didn't win another game.
Oh, my God.
It was unbelievable. Only the Lions could do that.
Yeah, only the Lions.
That was the year Sean Rogers was carried the team for 7 games.
He did, literally.
When The one game he struggles a bit, and Marinelli instantly puts it all on him. Like, he's just like,
I mean, a lot of fans are turning on him, but he was like one of our best players. And then when he left,
he was hands down our best player.
One of our best. Yeah, he was the best. Monster. Best player, period. Then I'm sorry, that guy. I've never seen a D lineman. No, few D linemen have affected the game the way he could when he was on. Like, and those guys are like Aaron Donald. So, like, he was just a monster.
Yeah.
Block kicks.
He could do it all.
That was nice.
Yeah.
And then we traded him for Lee Bodden and proceeded to put him on the bench to earn his. What a joke.
I thought Brock Wright looked good in this game, and Hock looked pretty decent as well again. But Brock Wright maybe is planning to replace Hock for next year.
You really don't want that contract going. Every week,
I just think there's better use of our money, unfortunately. As much as I like Hock, I just don't think he's worth what he's seeking to get paid.
You'll get to see us without a good tight end again and see how enjoy that.
Well, the aforementioned James Mitchell, our fourth round draft pick, is sitting around there doing something every week, not doing much on the field.
After watching Kittle and Kelsey take over games lately, I'm still down to see what Hock can, evolve into. I'm hoping, here's the thing. I'm not ready to sign Hock as is, but that being said, he's on a path of progression where I think by the end of the season, I might be eager to sign him because look, our offensive receiving core is decimated. We're rolling with scrubs. I mean, I know we got Cleef Raymond and Reynolds were not supposed to be the featured part of this game plan, this season. And Hock has stepped up a lot in that, but so is Wright. But Hock has stepped up and he's making plays. If he can continue to progress and become a better blocker and become, get that level Kelsey Kittle, oh man, that'd be a big part of, our potential Super Bowl future.
Yeah, like TLC says, no scrubs. We don't want no scrubs.
I don't want no scum.
It's like the other guys were quoting that.
On this subject, and I got to bring this up.
I don't understand.
I'll just say, it's always hard to see. And this kind of speaks back to what UJ said earlier. The guys catching the ball are only as good as the guy throwing them the ball. And does Goff elevate them? I don't think so. I think there's something better out there at $35 million a year.
It's possible 3 weeks from now we're like, holy shit, Goff's doing everything for us. But that's the thing with Goff is you're always going to have three good weeks and then you're going to have 2 to 3 bad weeks.
Yeah. I mean,
that one interception was brutal. That first one where he just dropped it short. Like, he had the guy.
It's possible
he
rides out the rest of the season looking great, and we're forgetting about the first overall pick, but I don't know.
I mean, and we've been.
If Jameson Williams ever comes
close, isn't he? He's got to be close now.
I wouldn't expect to see him.
Even after the Lions were the highest scoring offense in the NFL through the first 4 weeks of Goff, we're extremely encouraged by this Goff performance. But he needs to keep it up for an entire season in order to really prove that he could be the quarterback of the future. And unfortunately, he's regressing after a great first 4 weeks. I think he's regressing. It's a pocket presence. It goes back to what we saw last year. He's drifting back in the pocket, creating his own problems. There's a problem that isn't there, and he's making them appear. Frustrating.
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure there's not a problem there either. It's not like the pocket has been exactly pristine lately. Our O-line hasn't been playing its best either, I feel like. I mean, these guys are screaming off the edge a lot. And, I know it's easy to say step up in the pocket, but – and that pocket's not always there either. Sometimes the pocket's collapsing too. I'm saying he's got to do better. But I'm not willing to put this all on Goff right now either because – it's the offense.
He
has
did
been
do well against Seattle
as well.
With none of the top playmakers. He did really well, but then since then, without the top playmakers, it's been now. Maybe there's been scheme adjustments on defenses. It's been brutal. I mean,
you need guys who can create, especially against well disciplined and talented defenses like the Patriots and like I mean, I know not they're not all great defenses we're playing, but you just need to have guys who can create something. And Goff can't just be throwing guys open. I'll admit that he's not the best quarterback out there. You know,
you got to think like that. If you put Lamar Jackson in that game, if you put like, I don't know, any one of like, if you put Josh Allen in that game, what if you put Matt Ryan in that game? I'm not saying Matt Ryan's terrible.
Well,
I'm not, saying,
yeah.
Like, naming any random quarterback and like comparing them to Goff.
Matt Ryan in his day.
I meant
there
Matt
are
Ryan
elite
like
creators out
way,
there.
But Carson Wentz, you know, more negatives. But like, it's you have to think like, what does Goff offer you versus like what some of the other quarterbacks offer their teams? And I think if Lamar Jackson's in that game for the Lions, I think there's a really good chance they win that game.
Especially at $35 million a year. I just want to, you know, he's going to pay $35 million.
Well, that's the
year,
quarterback
so.
Position now. That's just the way it goes. Like, you're always going to pay your quarterback stupid money on a second contract.
You know, you paid that kind
Geno
of money.
Geno Smith's making $5
million. In a goddamn pocket.
Geno Smith's a weird
you
exception.
Paid $35 million. Step up.
So, what are you guys saying? Are we saying, you know, Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are becoming real potential
definitely number one overall where we're sitting they are but
that's a very good point. And I can't really argue with it. I'd like to defend Goff, and I do think, like, let's say we went with Goff, like, and we actually start to put, you know, a roster together of actual talent on the, like, a depth on the, you know, given receiving core that's not decimated, a running back crew that's good and stuff, and we actually build our defense next year, add a D tackle, add some, you know, linebacker help, and the rest of the team improves. I still think he's going to put you in, you know, the top part of the league. But in our current state, he's just not a guy who's going to carry you when your team's decimated around him in a lot of ways. Like, and I mean, I still think he gives you a better chance to win than a lot of quarterbacks out there. He's just not in that top tier of guys who can, you know, like the Mahomes and the Allens. And I mean, in his own way, Lamar Jackson, I mean,
understatement,
you know, you can make
year.
Your arguments on what type of
understatement of the year. Right?
What?
I thought
he's not in the league.
Yeah,
with
yeah right. Well, that's the best of the best, but let's see.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
And they just let the clock go down. And like,
yeah. What's that all about?
I think if you had Stafford or somebody, I think they would have taken a shot or two, you know, like tried to do something, but,
yep.
It showed a little lack of confidence in Goff that they didn't trust him with the ball there.
That's a good point.
Maybe it was Matt Stafford.
I didn't think of it that
Maybe
way.
It was Matt Stafford who encouraged
it. I mean, I'm okay. It could have still worked what they did, but I'm just saying if they had a better quarterback, I think they would have tried something there. But that's just my opinion.
Do you remember what happened when we did try that with Matt Stafford?
One time or several times.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't
think
a lot
of a billion
wins.
Times we tried.
Well,
that.
I'm just saying. Yeah. There's one play that changed the league's entire perception about that scenario, end of first half going for it, and that was when Julius Peppers drilled Matt Stafford into the ground on like a pass down going for it late in the end of the half and
that
knocked him out for the rest of the season.
None of us even remember
that. Is ridiculous.
Saying that changed the league?
You've been putting
it
one
did.
Play.
After that, you watched a lot. Like, I'm telling you, maybe it's come back to normal, but like for a while there, I swear other teams were constantly kneeling out the half and just getting way more conservative, not giving anyone a chance to get teed off on. I mean, maybe it's my own.
I think so.
World.
I think it is.
I'm telling you, that was it affected people when that happened.
But what about
deeply?
I forgot what I was going to say now.
You were roasting Rut Dog. You were coming after him.
I would never do that.
Roasting me? I don't feel roasted.
Rut Dog's a beloved character. A
beloved part of the Kool-Aid crew. Well, even with Goff, I don't understand why they don't at least take a couple downfield shots or something. Or even run some nifty, like, routes. I don't know, do a pitch out wide or something. I don't know.
You could have at least put together a couple more first downs and see if you get in field goal range or something, you know.
Yeah.
It was pretty damn
Which is a difference from Campbell, because he's the gambler, you know, all season, then he suddenly gets really concerned.
Well, that's a beef with Campbell is I feel like once people start dogging Campbell, he starts to revert into this really conservative version of himself. And I feel like he's not always consistent with his philosophy.
My hope is that he's still bracketing it, that this is an overcorrection towards more conservative, and that he's going to find a more comfortable middle ground and choose his shots and moments more appropriately as he learns. That's the hope anyway. Like, but this is just him, you know, going the other way, not because he's all, you know, oh my God, people are criticizing me, but just because, you know, things aren't working and he has to try things differently. You know, it's not whether or not people are criticizing him, he has no choice but to change his ways. So, I mean, this seems like an overcorrection. Let's hope, you know, he hones it in and gets, you know, a good fire for effect next game.
Z, I want to talk to one thing about the coaching because you brought up in the chat. I think the rest of us kind of like the coaching mostly, but you said bad coaching, plain and simple. Was your analysis of the game.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about you, but a lot of Lions fans, if you go on the podcast, or, you know, you go on the radio and fan pages, people are jumping off the ship left and right, you know, Holmes and Campbell. But now that we're at our lowest point of the season, I'm doubling down. I think these are the right guys for the team. You know, people are getting the ship's getting rocked. The waves, like after the Patriots game, I got knocked off the rail, but I hung on, you know. And now I'm climbing back on. I've strapped myself to the mast, and I'm like full speed ahead. This team, this is the right crew for this team, and it's going to happen. We just got to be patient, man. A little more patience after next year's draft. Yes. We're going to be competing for the whole thing.
You're like Lieutenant Dan. You got your shirt off. You're like, come after me, God.
That was a good one. I'm psyched now.
It's always darkest just before dawn. Hey,
Big Z's defense, I do this too. In the heat of the moment, I will say things in the chat that I don't really mean, but I'm so mad that I have to say something. So I'll attack the first thing I think of. Big Z, it was Campbell. Me, I don't know.
Well, I wasn't. I'm not totally going to. I was just saying the Lions fans in general. There's a lot of them like that. I'm not, and I just.
That's why we drink the Kool-Aid.
You're saying Big Z has leapt off the ship and he's swimming ashore. That's what you're saying.
Basically, he's out there looking for a quarterback and a coach.
He's like CJ Stroud. Where are you?
I am looking for a quarterback. I did not say I'm jumping off the ship of this coach.
I'm kidding. I was just kidding there. I don't think you've jumped the ship. I was making fun of Bob a little bit there.
But it's nice imagery, isn't it?
Yeah. Loved it.
It was good.
Loved it.
So Z, are you going to defend your position? What's up?
I mean, I defended it earlier in the podcast when you were on, but you know, I'll just be, because we were talking about like what I was talking about, like I was comparing the situation of what the Giants have to what we have. And I would argue we have maybe slightly more talent in some regards, minus Saquon Barkley. And they're managing to go 5-1, and we cannot pull out a victory because of late game, in a lot of ways, late game decision making. And there's just some concerns there for me in that regard. I know we're part of a 6-year plan here. I can't fault them for we can fault Holmes for having Jared Goff at quarterback, and maybe drafting some of these guys that are very injury prone. But as far as Campbell and the coaching staff, I still believe in what they're doing overall. They need to put it all together in one game.
Oh yeah,
always.
But what about in that game? In that game in particular, that was what you were talking about, or was yours more macro?
The biggest game on Campbell is
because in that game, I really thought
the
Vikings
game
was physical.
That is undisputably on Dan Campbell.
What do you guys are saying? These players need to execute more. My first thought was that's a Patricia quote that we heard that a million times out of Patricia. So,
NFL make coaching.
The question you can ask is discipline, though. Like, is the discipline there? That's coaching.
If it's about players executing better, then that is not an excuse. You need to come up with a better scheme.
Here,
fumbling—that's one.
What drives me nuts is
putting a player's best position to succeed.
But the fumbling. But it's not just one thing. The fumbling is the
one
thing
in this
it's
game.
It's the thing because it highlights it above all. The one thing we're supposed to be able to rely on more than anything else statistically is Jamal Williams holding on to the damn football. The one
fumbled twice in this game.
He loses but the one time he loses it, the first time he's ever lost a fumble, and we lose the game pretty much because of it. But that's like, I'm just saying, that's the kind of like snake bitten like thing going on right now. It all like it's they need to get over this, because like it's that kind of thing that we've seen time and time again. We always find a new thing to go wrong, regardless of what we correct. Like, that's what's so maddening. Even when everything else is right, we finally were.
And probably most Lions fans
will
out there be saying,
"No
this,
reason.
This the Lions. This is what happens to them." No,
right?
Other team.
Like,
it does. But what do you guys think? I'm just briefly, because we're getting late here. But
yeah,
if you look at the team, what they're doing, the players they got in, and what they need, don't you think they're on the right path? I mean, I do.
I really like Brad Holmes' drafting so far. I know you can pick a couple choices, but he's got some good picks late in rounds. And like Pascal and all that, mm-hmm. like they're playing the long game with Williams and those guys. Like we may be frustrated with that, but they're playing a different game than we are. Like they're thinking long term and we're thinking short term.
True.
So, I don't know.
Yes.
And to Pascal Connor, I know the injury and all that, but you saw out there, he flashed what they saw on him. You could tell when he's rushing, that power and speed. Like he steps out. He stands out. Even if he didn't, produce a lot in his first game ever,
He played a ton of snaps like we talked about earlier on the pod, and I don't think he did that bad. I think there's a future there. So I'm high
Absolutely.
On the draft.
Absolutely.
Hey, I want to bring up one thing. We can make it really quick. All right. I know it's going long, but it's 1 week to the – trade deadline in the NFL November 1st. So who do we not trade? No way, no how. Or do we put everyone up there as bait?
Well, our young guys, obviously.
Well, yeah. Really like Sewell
Hutchinson.
Rockers, for the washing machine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trade him away for free. Very easy trade block piece right there. What is the guy gunning
for? Yeah, but you know he's
us?
A dynamic player.
He's
some team could really use a guy like that, give you a couple good draft picks. What about Hawk?
Yeah, give us something.
No way.
No.
I'm just saying, man. I mean, we're talking draft capital.
Depends on
we're
what
talking
you offer
draft
for
capital.
Hawk would probably go for
a
fourth
draft
round.
Capital. I want good players.
I think you get more than that.
I'd rather target like a player out there than draft capital. Like if you could trade for like a defender
that,
or something.
I doubt that would happen.
I don't know.
Just asking. I just had to ask a question because I think nothing should be off the table personally. But
well, the Hawk one's really interesting, I guess. Yeah, I mean, 1 in 5 likelihood of making the playoffs is almost none with that type of record statistically in the NFL. Not impossible, obviously. So the thing with it, UJ. If Hawk gets signed for big money, then the Lions probably get a third round compensatory draft pick. So that is something else to consider too. So would you rather trade him for a fourth rounder, or you just let him play out the season? You get the compensation in the late third round.
I think you get more than a fourth rounder for Hawk.
I
get fourth rounder.
I think so. A tight end.
That'd be. Fourth rounder?
You would have to get more than that to trade him, though, I guess is what I'm saying. Because otherwise, he'll probably get a decent contract and probably get the Lions probably get third or fourth round draft pick compensation for losing him in free agency.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying we give players away. I'm saying, like, if some marvelous deals come out.
There's not a receiver. The only safe receiver on this team is St. Brown and Jameson Williams and St. Brown at this point. I mean,
pretty much
nothing. No one's overly impressed. Raymond's solid.
I don't think so.
The thing is, you can't even afford. Yeah, you're not going to get anything. And
the good thing about Brad Holmes and his free agent wide receiver signings is that he signs them to 1 year deals. The bad news is that they have all not turned out to be very good so far.
Okay, what about Taylor Decker?
Yeah, it looks like we're going to.
Throw that one.
No, I don't. No.
Smooth Sewell to left.
Missing another huge piece.
On the draft
for
line.
Micah Parsons.
I'm just saying.
I trade Taylor Decker for Micah Parsons.
And this is not the last year's contract, so I would not say.
Well, that makes it more attractive to a potential
suitor. Right, but I don't. I think the Lions want him for the future. I would highly imagine.
I do too, but you have Sewell inevitably coming over that left side. It's going to become an issue at some point.
I think Decker
depends on what you get.
Exactly.
Like,
But don't we, as Lions fans, maybe, I don't know if coaches do the same thing, we fall in love with players because we have nothing else to fall in love with because they don't win ever. We fall in love with players.
Well, yeah.
Maybe rightfully so. I mean, we, you know, why we just, like, we can't let people go. We like the guy. He's a good guy. He just had a
baby. He plays really well,
he
too.
He played well, you know, like. I mean,
we like Joseph Fourier.
I don't want Decker to go.
He's an excellent player, though. Decker's not Fourier. Decker's, like, one of the top players in the league.
I know. I'm just saying,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I know.
That's not to, no, I'm not talking about just one game, but yeah. I mean, look at Belichick, does it all the time. He trades guys in his prime. He's done it his whole history.
That's,
I mean,
true.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but if you,
yeah, we tried the pitcher,
including us.
It sucked.
Oh yeah.
Here's the thing: if you can, let's say you trade Decker for like a first and a second or something like that, like, I mean, that could be serious capital towards building your future. And he's going
to
leave.
But now
find
another.
You have his heir.
It's hard to find one. They're really hard to find.
But a right, it's easier to find a right tackle than a left tackle. Oh. We'll already have an elite left tackle on the roster. I'm just saying. It's something we're going to have to deal with at some point.
I wouldn't say it's
right
that easy to find
a
right tackle.
I hate that idea.
I didn't say it was easy.
Swift, if you're going to give up some stuff, Swift, he's more replaceable.
Swift makes more sense, yeah.
But I wouldn't want to get rid of him either, but that would make more sense.
Well, I don't either, but he's not on the field half the time. So, I mean.
Yeah, it's like we don't have him anyway.
Whatever, but I don't. I like him.
I threw it out there. I wanted to see what you guys thought, so.
Worth considering it right off of there.
All right. No, I like it, dude. I like it.
They have to be.
Good points being made. I mean, Christian McCaffrey just went for a second, third, fourth, and a fifth. Crazy compensation for one running back.
Yeah, and who won that trade? And who do you guys think won that trade? I mean,
the week one, it looks like the Panthers.
Because not only that, the Panthers also don't have to pay $12 million salary for the next 3 years. So
I
definitely think the Panthers.
If the Niners win the Super Bowl, then they won the trade. But otherwise, I don't see it happening.
Yeah. And the Rams are trying to trade.
I mean, that's the thing
too. It's crazy. The 49ers got 6 third round draft picks because 3 of their coaches / front office guys got hired by other teams and they're minorities. So they got, you get 2 third round draft pick compensation when that happens. And they got 3 of them signed in one offseason. So they got 6 third rounders.
Oh my God.
So that's reasoning
crazy
for trading away so much draft capital for a running back. But at least that's how they've sold it. But anyways, I think we've talked about a lot. And I think this is a good place to come to an end for this episode. All right. So Lions lose 24-6. They'll be hosting the Miami Dolphins next week at Ford Field, and the Lions are going to try to right the ship. So let's hope they can. And we will not be jumping off that ship. We'll be right on that ship with them.
Right.
Of course not.
We'll be playing the cello.
So thank you to Sideline Report, the aforementioned SidelineReport.com for hosting this podcast. Always greatly appreciate that. Go check out that golf article and other articles on there by Brad Berryman and their team. Thank you. Instagram at Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid. Twitter at Drinking Lions. Follow us on there. Let us know your thoughts on this current regime. If you think we're on the right track, the wrong track, so on and so forth. And thank you to, of course, our producer, KJ.
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 All right.
We're getting better.
We did get
better
on that one. So awesome. And thank you to the listeners. We always greatly appreciate it. So subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave a review. Always greatly appreciate that. Otherwise, gentlemen, listeners, we thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back later this week previewing that Dolphins game at Ford Field this upcoming Sunday. So thank you everybody for listening. And last but not least, as always,
go.
Lions!
Woo-hoo!
Forward down the field, a charging team that will not yield. And when the blue and silver wave, stand and cheer the brave. Rah, rah, rah! rah! Go hard, win the game. With honor, you will keep your fame. Down the field and gain a Lions victory.
Go!
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.